we talk? This is a little loud. Okay, great. This morning we talked about the first three steps, which I would call the process of being ready. Tom talked about willingness, so readiness and willingness get used in the same breath. In a lot of cases, in talking about steps. The thing that most people mix up on the sixth step, six-step reads, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and some people read that, we're entirely willing to have God remove all these defects of character. I'm not sure what the difference is, to be honest. I think probably readiness is more of an emotional state, that we are emotionally ready to move on. We're emotionally ready to hit bottom, to know that this time it's going to work. Being willing doesn't seem necessarily to be enough. But willingness is probably an essential condition for readiness. So if the first three steps are getting ready, we may be willing, we may really want to have our addictive behavior removed. We may really want to start on the spiritual path, but somehow we have to be ready for it. And that's a mystery. I can't tell you exactly how that works, but I've seen different people needing to get to different points of readiness. I had one sponsee when I lived in Washington, D.C., who always talked about himself as being a high bottom, that he was a member of several programs, but that basically the trigger for him, for becoming a member of the program, was something is a little wacky in my life around this. Just, the food, he never had much weight to lose. It was just that he wasn't eating exactly the way he wanted to eat. He thought he was using food compulsively. Breakfast, that's what I'm talking about, sure. And he got involved in the sex program as well. And it was mainly because he was married to a member of the program. He wanted to be faithful to her. And he found himself looking at other women. Just looking, not doing anything, just looking. And thinking, and having lustful thoughts about them. And so he thought, this is getting my life out of whack a little bit. So he joined the program and started working steps about that. Can we turn this down a little bit more? I think that movie's like way, way too. Okay, there we go. No, it's like, I don't mind holding it. It's just, I didn't want to like have to hold it here and have it still getting back on issues. Okay, so being ready is an important concept for me, and it's a concept that only you can decide. I can't, if I'm your sponsor, I can't decide for you that you're ready. You have to be willing, first of all, to do it, and then actually be ready to take the steps. And once you're ready, the steps come to be easily. It took me a year from starting the program to really be ready to work step four, even though I started it several times before that and just got frustrated with it. So it's interesting, the big book actually talks about the fourth step in the same chapter as the first three. So I'm not sure, and then they label the fifth step onward as into action. I would label the fourth step as being into action, but at least the people who wrote the big book didn't think of it as in that way. I think they felt the fourth step was also part of being ready, part of that whole process of trying to understand what's going on in my life and how do we deal with that. Well, the first three steps are kind of conceptual and theoretical. We have to think about a power greater than ourselves. We have to perhaps experience that power in our life somehow. For me, it was the power of other people in the program. Being there for me, being ready to care for me, that was the thing that pushed me onward, that I wouldn't have gotten any other way.
And then we have to sit down and we have to write this four steps. Well, the four steps of solitary activity is something that we can't necessarily do with other people. It's something that maybe we can do in a group. You can sit and write on a four step in a group and then maybe share on it and have other people support you. But it's ultimately something I have to do by myself. Sponsors said to me, I want to write my four step, and I want to share it with you as I write it. And I say, I won't do it that way. Because then it becomes kind of this rolling thing of, I'm writing it out, I'm sharing it with you, I'm writing it out. And I don't see that as the experience of writing the four step. I see that as discovery, as looking at my life on a daily basis and kind of figuring out who I am. If you want to do some writing on a daily basis and report to me what you've written and what you're learning from it, I'm happy to hear that, but that's not your four step. So, what is the four step? Well, the Big Book says that it's a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. Fearless and thorough, which means that we get to look at everything that we possibly can, and it's moral. Now, you know, Bill Wilson used the word sin to talk about his writing down what the sins were. And perhaps at that particular time, in that particular era and the religious consciousness that he had at the time, sin was a good word for him to use. Sin is not necessarily a great word for everybody to use. As I said, I ended up writing about all the thing that worked for me best was writing about all the stuff in my life that I still have feelings about. Because feelings, for me, are what hide our character defects. Feelings are the result of our character defects. Feelings are the things that we carry around with us that keep us from moving forward. And that provoke us in some way or another. So, and the Big Book understands that because it talks about writing in three different areas. It talks about writing about your resentments, and writing about your fears, and then it switches gears and writing about your sexual conduct. My guess is that Bill Wilson had some guilt about his sexual conduct, at least in terms of you know, Lois has a book later, and what other people have written about him, that he did have a number of affairs. And so he wanted to be honest. He wanted to be realistic, but even in the Big Book, as Harlan pointed out this morning, he was having trouble doing that. He was having trouble saying that he didn't really do anything to harm Lois when he was drinking. He just had those kinds of things. But later on in the book, on page 69, he says, now about sex. All of us have some kind of problem in that area, and we need to deal with it. So, that was not what I did when I first started the program. I wasn't ready to deal with that. I looked at that part of the Big Book and said, I don't understand this. This may have worked for Bill Wilson, but it's not going to work for me. And so I went off to do whatever I wanted to do, which was to write narratives. And that's the woman I had as a sponsor who kind of called me on that and said, you know, this is all well and good, but this isn't what the Big Book says to do. Was right in the end. But I got to experience the fact that I did have resentments because I resented her for quite a while for telling me that. And basically, I stopped calling her, and basically, I was glad when she said that she could gone out of the food and couldn't be my sponsor anymore. And I never talked to her again, and I never saw her again after that. But it was the reason that I think they were right was because getting at resentments and getting at our fears get at our character defects. Those are the things that come up that we use to mask our character defects. If we're doing something that's harming other people, and they find out about it, then we get a resentment on the fact that they found out. If they didn't find out about it, we live in fear that they're going to find out. So, and if we're doing something that's harming ourselves, oftentimes we live in fear as well, that we're going to be, that we're going to be found out somehow. So we're living an implicitist life, a double life. This happens a lot around food. People sneak eat. I certainly did that. People eat differently in public than they do in private. I certainly did that. It's interesting, the chapter 3 of the big book says, in talking about alcoholism, that anyone can do a right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we tried all kinds of different ways. And I kind of adopted that as personal standard and modified it and said that in all of my affairs, I want to eat like a gentleman. And for me, that means being able to eat so that if anybody saw me eating, I would be pleased with what they saw. That I would be at least okay with what they with what they saw. Do I always live up to that standard? Why not? Not even today. I live up to it more than I don't live up to it, which is good, but it's a standard that I've tried to establish for myself. So, if people saw me eating, would I be pleased to have them watching? And that's what I mean by eat like a gentleman. And that's what I strive for on a daily basis, besides trying to eat and helping out. And there's plenty of guidance out there about what's healthy. And you know, my food plan includes not eating my rich foods, but and eating 3 meals a day with the possibility of a snack, and then eating in a healthy manner. And being honest in terms of what I need. Trying to be honest with myself and be honest with other people as well. So writing about those feelings somehow gets us into the fourth step. The fourth step need not be overwhelming. Very oftentimes it is. And the reason is that as we start to write about our feelings, more feelings come up. We start feeling that anger, we start feeling resentment, we start feeling the fear. And that becomes overwhelming, and you stop. I don't think there's any particular approach that's any better than any others, but I like the one that Joe and Charlie take. And if you are interested in giving your email address, and I have their forms in email form, in digital form that I can send to you. Basically, what Joe and Charlie do is take the big book and translate it to a form. And the thing that they do that I think works really well is they start with resentments. They say, list everybody for whom you have a resentment. And so instead of asking you to work across the columns and say, why do I have a resentment and how did, what does it affect? They just say, make a list. Make a list of everybody you can think of with whom you have a resentment. And they work down the columns. And that to me works really well because what it does is it says, let's just do this one step at a time. Let's not get overwhelmed by the feelings that are going on here. Let's just try to think about everybody in our life where we still have some feeling about that person. Where there's a resentment that's going on there. And let's just make a list of those people and let's let it go at that. So we keep working on that until we have the list. Now, it doesn't mean that if you start on the next column and you remember something else, you can't go back and list it. But it becomes very systematic and it keeps some of the emotions from coming up. And it doesn't have to be super long. It doesn't have to be 250 pages, this one of my sponsors wrote, before I started doing this. Because the object of the thing is, first of all, to get out everything that's gone on in your life that you need to get rid of, And secondly, to identify what those character defects are. And that's another strange term that I think we need to talk about a little bit in terms of, you know, what are we really talking about when we talk about character defects. But I'll come back to that in a second. So you make the list. And then the second column is the cause of my resentment. And it's not very big. The little box there on the form isn't very big. So you have to put it down in just a phrase. It's not like this extensive narration that I tend to write. And, but that's just the way I am. I like to write long narratives. And I'm an academic that you get kind of thing. So this makes you telescopic. You put it down in just a minor form, and you work down the columns again. Go to each person that you listed, and then write down, you know, what went on, what in brief, and it's like all these things may come up. It may be a very long relationship, but you have to parse it down to a few words. And to me, that works really well. You know, and you may have to give like a couple of phrases in there to remind yourself, because there may be something big in there that you're going to have to talk about eventually. But just writing down a couple of things really, really makes a difference as far as I'm concerned. So you do that for everybody that you got on the list. Then you go back and you do the third column, which is the effects mind column. And they've got all the categories that can take with this. And those can be confusing categories, but I think most people can figure out reasonably what they mean and check those things off. And the thing to notice is that if you go down and do that, is there something, is there a column that I'm checking most often? Am I being self-serving, for example, a lot? Or does this affect my sexual relations a lot, for example, or something like that? And do I get resentful over a particular thing? And then the last column is my part of it. And again, there's some categories to choose from. And go down and make check marks. But work down the columns. Then we do this again for fears. And again, we make the list of everybody that we're afraid of, although that can also include institutions, include principles that we're afraid of. Then we go back and again write why, and so forth, and we do all that. Finally, we write about sex conduct. And with that one, it changes just a little bit. That with sex conduct, it is we make a list of people we have harmed with our sex conduct. And then we make another list. The second column is why have we done that. And then again, the third and the fourth columns are the same. So we go through and we do this, and this really could be done in an afternoon. You notice that in Bill Wilson's story, that he and Evie met quite a bit during the time they were doing it, but it was a short period of time. And I think Bill initially conceived of the steps to be worked over a relatively short period of time. That it was really important to get through it intensively, have the spiritual experience, and then really focus on going out and working with others in the 12th step. And that's a major part of his story about how much 12-step work he did, how much he worked with others. So we tend to stretch out, so in my experience, a lot of my sponsees tend to want to stretch the 4-step out over months, sometimes years. And I think that if we can push through it more intensively, that it would benefit us in terms of working on that spiritual experience. First of all, it becomes more intensive. Secondly, we get to see things in a light that's reflected by the fact that we worked on it all at once. And then third, we get to move on with the program. So by the time you're done, basically, you should have not a whole lot of these pages. You should probably have, you know, maybe 10, 12 pages at most. Some people may have more, some people may have less, but it's not like you're going to have 250 pages or stuff. So when we get to the fifth step, when I work with sponsors on the fifth step, I say, now what I want to hear is, I don't want you just to read me these things verbatim. You know, what I want to hear is, you know, what does this touch off with you? What's the experience that you need to share that's going on about this? And then what we start to look at is, where are the patterns that occur in this? Do things that are there affect you in the same way? Is your part in it pretty much the same from time to time? And how can you label the behaviors that you engage in in a habitual way? Because I believe that it's those habitual behaviors that are reflective of the character defects. We can give them a name, and usually we do. You know, we give them some kind of a name, like you know, use the seven deadly sins. That's one that's used a lot. But we can give those characters, you know, some kind of name that is meaningful to the person who's doing the work. And typically, what I'll do is, by the time the person is finished with the fifth step, we'll have identified a list. The last one I did had about 25 character defects on it. And then, at least according to the big book, you should be able to read through step 6 and 7, because at this point you've really been completely ready. You've made it this far spiritually, and you're just ready to let them go. Well, I found that doesn't always work. That a lot of times people need, once they identify this list of 20, 25 things, they need some time to think about it. Oftentimes, these are times, you know, what am I going to do if I give these things up? I kind of, you know, many of these things are very functional for me. Many of these things are things that I've done all my life. They're a part of me. What's going to happen to me if I give them up? Am I going to become so much of a different person that I can't deal with life anymore? Are all my friends going to desert me? Am I going to change in ways that I don't like about myself? These are all fears, and they're all legitimate fears that people go through. And so basically, at that point, oftentimes there needs to be a little bit of a pause while people become better. And then I try to tell people, don't make this too long a pause. Because I've had people who've taken a pause and then gone 6-8 months before they came back to it. But there was a need to do that. You know, in the case of the person who I worked with who did that, there was an absolute need just to think that all through. And keep going to meetings, keep getting the support from the group that we did in order to get through it. So at the end of the sixth step, I try to make an appointment with my sponsees again and say, let's get together and let's pray the seven-step prayer, and let's pray for removal of each character defect. And I found that typically to be a very powerful experience. I have always, in my recovery, found that whenever I had worked through something, identified some character defects, become ready to have them removed, and ask for them to be removed, that something happened. Sometimes it was not what I expected, but something happened. I'll give you an example. I told you the story that the last inventory I did was I identified my pornography as being a character defect. That's how I labeled it at that particular point. I wasn't really thinking of it as an addiction. I was thinking of it as something that I did. It was harmful to myself, it would become harmful to myself, and it was something that I needed to let go of. And so I I asked for it to be removed, and it was removed for a little while. But then it came back again, and I was out getting the pornography again, and I realized that you know it hadn't been removed. I got very frustrated, so I said, well, maybe I just need to ask again. So this time, I took off all my clothes. I sat down in the middle of my bedroom and on the floor, and I prayed to God, and I said, God, I'm here before you as you made me. I'm really desperate about this. I really need some guidance. Please remove this from me. Or show me what to do. Because I know this isn't good for me anymore. But I will not mind you about it. And I felt better after doing that. And about 3 weeks after that, two things happened. One of them was the first woman I had sex with contacted me out of the blue and wanted a letter of recommendation for her teaching. Well, I had never seen her teach, but she felt she needed to contact me, and I took that as being a sign that I was being told something about this. I don't know quite what, but I was being told something about this action. Then the next thing that happened was I went to a meeting of this other fellowship I had gone to, family-oriented fellowship, and the speaker was sharing about using pornography. And I went up to him after the meeting and said, you know, I'm so glad you talked about that because I was planning on going out tonight and getting some pornography, and now I don't think I have to. And he looked at me and said, you know, I go to this other program, and maybe that would be helpful to you. And so he talked to me. And so instead of having a character defect to be removed, I had an addiction that I needed to deal with. And I went to this other program and ended up being in that program very intensively. Working that program very, very hard for a good year, just trying to get through the issues of my sexuality, and having a loving person who I asked to be my sponsor confront me about some of the things that I had. I went in there saying, "Well, I've got this pornography addiction, but what I really need to that I've been going to some meetings for a while, and I've heard people talking about all these other things that they do, and I need to abstain from all those other things because they're wrong. I just know I'll get into doing them as soon as I'm not doing pornography anymore." And my sponsor said, "Have you ever done any of these things?" And I said, "No, I just heard about the meetings." And he said, "Well, I suggest that you don't abstain from them until they actually become a problem." and that was really great advice because it was like I wanted to take care of everything once. It was, you know, even though I had been in recovery for about 12 years at that point, 12, 13 years, I just wanted to take care of everything once, you know. I was going to stay in the whole world, and that was going to be the solution. He called me with that. I also took down sex with men as being something that I wanted to abstain from. And he gently said to me, "Are you sure you're not gay?" And I paused a long time. And I finally said, "No, I'm not sure I'm not gay." He said, "Then I suggest that you don't put that down as being something that you want to abstain from." And within another year, I was dating men. So it was, you know, that was what led to the big breakthrough in my program, was finishing that inventory, making a list of character defects, trying to let them go, seeing that the answer was, no, this isn't the character defect, but it took me a little while to figure that out. And then working on it as if it were an addiction and having a whole new arena in my program open up. And healing and having a whole new version of the spiritual experience come to me in terms of doing that. In terms of steps 8 and 9, after we're done with this, we should have a list, a pretty good list of people. And then what you go through on that list is to go through and look at it and say, all right, who among these people have I actually harmed? You know, just because I resented them or I was afraid of them does not necessarily mean that I harmed them. So can I identify the people that have actually done something that's harmful to? And let me make a list of those people and write down very specifically how did I harm them. My tendency is to think that that I harm people by my existence. The fact that I am in people's lives harms them, you know, somehow, because I'm an unworthy person. And so consequently I need to go out and make amends to lots of people for having been in their lives. And that's I don't believe that's what the big book intends. I don't believe that's what the steps intend. Certainly alcoholics have had a history of oftentimes of stealing things, of borrowing money and not paying it back, needing to make what Bill Wilson called restitution that they later changed to making amends. But I think he was thinking a lot of financial restitution because that was his problem. And so, you know, in terms of examining where the actual harm is, I think that shortens the list. It tends to shorten the list considerably. Some people like to put themselves on top of the list and say that I need to be made amends to. My take on that is you made amends to yourself by working steps 4 to 7. So you don't have to be up on top of your amends list as today. If you still feel you need to be there, maybe there's something you missed about working steps 4 to 7 that we need to go back and we need to work on some more before we go on. But if you really get to step 8 and say, I'm owed something out of this, other than the spiritual experience I'm having in 4 to 7, that might be a problem, might be indicative of a problem. But I hear it all the time. I mean, I put myself on top of my amends list because I need to make amends to myself. And you know, maybe that's true for some people, and I'm just not getting it. But that's my take on it. So once we've done that, then there's the actual setting out to do it, to make the amends. And that's when a sponsor can be really helpful in terms of deciding how to do that and under what circumstances. And actually following through with it. And sometimes that can take a while because finding the people can be a problem, or sometimes the people are dead and how do you deal with it, or sometimes you don't know who the people are. One of my sponsees had seen prostitutes and wanted to make amends and has no way of really doing that. So I suggested that he make donations, a fairly substantial donation to an organization that helps prostitutes, and he did that. He did that and felt better about it. The idea in working the 9th step is it's not about the other person. It's about the fact that we have to let go of all the things that are holding us back. That's part of the spiritual experience on a daily basis. Is we have to try to live healthy in the moment on a daily basis, and that's what helps us to be able to be healthy and have the rest of our lives be healthy. And if we let go of all the things that are bugging us, that come back to haunt us, then we are able to come back and do that more perfectly on a daily basis. Obviously it's not perfect. It's not a perfect existence. There's stuff that comes up. But the fact that we've actually taken all this action and worked the spiritual program around it should remove a lot of the feelings that we have about what went on in the past. I tell people after giving away the 4th step, you're done with this. You've given it away. You don't have to revisit it again. If you choose to revisit it again, you can revisit it as memories of things that you've actually worked through. But you don't have to go back and have emotional freshness and resonance around this again. And if you are, then maybe there's something else that needs to be worked on. So that's my take on steps 4 through 9. That's how I encourage people that I sponsor to do those things. It's how I've come to over the years working that in my own life. And when we come back tomorrow, we'll talk about what I think Bill Wilson considered to be the three most important steps in the program, which are maintaining our spirituality on a daily basis in several different ways. So we'll look forward to talking.